नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Text 1.
Yeah.
Canto 5, Chapter 15, The Descendants of King Priyavrata. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The son of Maharaj Bharat, known as Sumati, followed the path of Rishabhdev, but some unscrupulous people imagined him to be Lord Buddha himself. These people, who were actually atheists and of bad character, took up the Vedic principles in an imaginary, infamous way to support their activities. These sinful people accepted Sumati as Lord Buddhadev and propagated the theory that everyone should follow the principles of Sumati. In this way, they were carried away by mental concoction."
Shri Chaitanya Manabhistam Shapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Upakaramaya Dadati Swaparantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunityananda Shri Raita Garara Shiva Suri Gaura Bhakti Vindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So in this age of Kali, the Srimad Bhagavatam has come, especially as a literary incarnation, Krishna himself, to help us understand the bewildering situation. We will be bewildered. It's natural to become bewildered in this material world because we're so small and the energy of the material world is so great that naturally we become covered or influenced or overcome, confused, frustrated. This is the normal progress. Any sane person has to go through these kind of existential dilemmas. Or why am I suffering? What is the purpose of life? How do I get out of this situation? Any intelligent person at one time or another has to think these things. And why is that? Because actually the whole arrangement is to bring us to this point of being sincere inquirers. But to be a really sincere inquirer, we have to admit that we're in an awkward position. Unfortunately, this is not easy to do because we become proud of our little advantage we have. We may have some little advantage over others, and so we become proud. This is the nature of the false ego. The false ego is what brings us to the material world. We think that we can be separate, that we're independent, and that we don't need to follow. Therefore, the advice is given, Mahajana Yena Saparata Kanta, we should follow the great souls, just like Rishabhdev is being mentioned here. However, in the Kali Yuga especially, in order to know what to follow, what great souls to follow, and so on, there we need to study Srimad Bhagavatam, which was specially left by the compiler of all the Vedas, all this Vedic knowledge. The Aryans, as they mentioned, this is where Hitler got his idea, Aryan superior. They were superior because they strictly followed. But they didn't feel themselves superior, not like Hitler. They felt themselves to be very, humble. But because they strictly followed, therefore they became successful in the human form of life. So what is that success? That success is to get out of this entanglement, to become eligible to enter into the kingdom of God. So, in order to do that, then we have to follow the great, the footsteps of the great souls, and we have to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. This was the advice given. Just like every morning we have the Srimad Bhagavatam in all the temples, because this is the first, you can say, philosophy that we should assimilate. And this was what Lord Chaitanya taught. A very intelligent person came to Lord Chaitanya and asked him, well, what are you doing? Please teach me. He said, well, Lord Chaitanya took a humble position and he said, I don't know very much. I've heard from Ramananda Roy, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and therefore I recommend you also hear from him. So this is the system, that we should regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam from the Vaishnava, who understands it and can explain it. Otherwise, just like Prabhupada's purport, explaining what is the position of Lord Buddha and so on, we can easily become bewildered by these things. You know, the Buddhists, they seem to be sincere, like this Dalai Lama and so on. But actually they're lost. They're creating something out of their own brain. They may have a very fertile brain, but it's concoction. It's called the charity of the mind. The charity of the mind is very powerful, and maybe intelligence may be very deep, but both intelligence and mind are material. So if we're in the material world, we want to get out of the material world, how can we expect that something like a material thing will get us out? The same with LSD. It's also material, or any other psychedelic or whatever. This was a question we had when we were first coming to Krishna consciousness. Well, why can't we use LSD as a sacrament? But LSD is also a material thing. How can it bring us to the spiritual platform? So we want to come to the spiritual platform, then we have to get help from somebody who's already on the spiritual platform. So Srila Prabhupada is such a person. Therefore, his following him, or taking his instruction, his advice, can also bring us to the spiritual platform. This is the simple system. But we have to, you know, be patient about it. We can't demand. But if we sincerely follow regularly, then certainly we'll become eligible to get the mercy of the Lord. This is the only thing that can bring us to the spiritual platform. Now we're on the material platform, we want to come to the spiritual platform. We can't just build a staircase. This is what's Ravana's idea. By some kind of work, we'll build this and this, and then gradually we'll go up, up. This is the illusion of progress in this material world. We think if we accumulate education, money, you know, a good family, good nation, just like people are trying to come to America, they think this is an advantage. Then I'll be an American citizen. My children will be American citizens. So they'll have an advantage of a good good country. But all these kind of attempts to bring yourself higher, it will never penetrate this material covering. It won't be sufficient to get us out of the material world. And what is the symptom of the material world? That we have to die. There may be so many drugs you can take to extend your life and so on, but still you have to die. Nobody can live. Like we're dealing in amber, 40 million years old. Nobody's going to live like that. But still, 40 million years is not such a long time. But can you imagine, even the most optimistic, what do they call them? Bioengineers are going to change the cells and all these things that they're hoping to do to extend life. You're not going to live for 40 million years. You have to die. Bhagavad Gita clearly says, everyone born has to die. And everyone who dies has to be born. This is the cycle of birth and death. It's going on. Whether you like it or not, it's going. It's a law superior to you. So, then, how do I get out of this predicament? Yes, that's possible by getting mercy from the spiritual side. You can get mercy from the Lord, from His representative, and then the representative also can't really save you, but he can pray for you on behalf of the Lord. And because the Lord is Bhakti Vatsal, the Lord is inclined to His devotee. So just like Srila Prabhupada, if we get Prabhupada's mercy, then He may put a good word for us with Krishna. And then we'll become qualified to get out of this material world. This is how it works. This is the system. It's called Parampara. That's why Prabhupada mentioned this word, Parampara, in the purport. We have to understand in Parampara, not that we're going to create our own system. It's already there. The system is already there. It's coming down. It's being handed down. It's called Sampradaya, or disciplinary succession. So if we connect with that bona fide Sampradaya, there are four Sampradayas actually, we're in the Brahma Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, then we can expect, we can hope, not hope against hope, but we can have firm faith, confidence, that we can also become eligible to get out of this cycle of birth and death. Most people, they have no idea of that there's anything beyond this world. They may take some subtle aspects of this world, of the material world, as spiritual. This is generally what goes on. Some psychic phenomena, some mental telepathy, some, and they think, oh, this is spiritual. But this is not spiritual. This is also on the material platform. We want to get to the spiritual platform. It's a completely different dimension, categorically different. It has nothing to do with some extended material phenomena. That's why we don't put much faith in these people like Art Bell or somebody. They may have so many, intuitions of that there's something beyond the ordinary life, like ghosts and so on. They believe in those things. It's true. There are things beyond that. But it's still, in order to get to that spiritual platform, they don't know the process. Therefore, they're blind leading the blind. They may have so many followers, but they can't really, in fact, get us out of the predicament because they can't get themselves out. The only way you can get out, you have to get mercy of God. Therefore, in some way, the Christians are closer to the idea. The idea is we got to have mercy. And so they say like that, Christ is the only way. They become fanatical because they think Christ is the only way. And therefore, they disqualify themselves in some way. But it's true. What they say is you have to get mercy from above in order to make a solution to this dilemma that we're in. And we are in a dilemma. This should be the first understanding. Nobody wants to grow old, but old age is coming. Who can check? Nobody wants disease. Disease is coming. They're making so many attempts to avoid disease, but then there's a new disease, West Nile, whatever, virus or something. Yeah, it's going on. It's going to always be there because it's arranged in that way so that an intelligent person will become frustrated. The whole arrangement of the material world is to bring us this to the point of saying, now I see that I can't be happy by being independent of God. So therefore, I should surrender to Him. And how do we surrender to Him? We surrender through the representative of God. This is the problem with the Christians also, is that they don't have the current link. They also, Christ is our God. Although He never said He was God. He said He's the representative. He was a bona fide guru. And He said, yes, now you can build this church, and then I appoint Peter, he can be the head of the church. So this is the way He wanted it to go on. That there would be a local representative. And of course they're trying with the Pope and the priests and so on. So this is closer probably, the Catholic Church is closer to the idea if you want to be a real Christian. Not like these Protestants who just make up their own idea. Martin Luther, he makes up his own philosophy. No, we have to accept it coming down. That was why Prabhupada wrote Bhagavad Gita. He said, there's so many Bhagavad Gitas in English language, but none of them actually pick up the real spirit of the Bhagavad Gita. The real spirit is mentioned in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna tells Arjuna, I'm instructing you this science because you are my friend and my devotee, therefore you can understand it. And he says, now the parampara appears to be broken, so I'm reestablishing it. So Arjuna then became the guru after Krishna. And those who have the same understanding as Arjuna, they're also gurus. So this way it's coming down, the cyclic succession. So, what else? I didn't touch on the verse very much, or the purport. Any questions?
I had a question. It's not exactly about what you're talking about.
That's all right.
It simply said in a sentence or two, what is the basic difference in belief between the Buddhists and the devotees of Krishna?
The basic difference is that we believe that God is a transcendental person who is existing outside of this material world eternally in his body, which is full of knowledge and bliss. That he has a transcendental body, and God is eternally existing. And we have an eternal relationship with that person. But they believe, for the most part, I mean, there are some who worship the Buddha, the statue of Buddha, but even then, they believe that we're all Buddhists. But Buddha was just one who realized his Buddhahood. And so we should also try to realize our Buddhahood, then we'll be perfect.
So the Buddhists do not believe in God?
No. I was in Thailand and preached. The Jains also don't believe in God. You mentioned the Jains. The Jains, in India you see them, they sometimes have a thing over their mouth, they carry a broom so they don't want to step on any insect. They're non-violent, very strictly, really, fanatically non-violent. But they don't believe in God. But that's a big difference. We don't really consider the Buddhists and the Jains.
They have some similar beliefs like reincarnation,
yeah,
and this and
but
that.
But who's keeping the accounts? They believe in reincarnation. That means you get your karma at the time of death. Who's the one who's figuring out what your karma is? That you ask them that. You believe in karma? Yes, we believe. But who's keeping the accounts of your karma, good or bad? And why should it be good or bad? What is it? What in the universe, that makes us think that there's good or bad? That it has to come back to God, because God is good.
So there's really no good or bad karma.
There is no, the point I'm making is, if you follow the Buddhist philosophy to its logical conclusion, you have to come to the point: why is there good karma, or why is there bad karma? Why is somebody rewarded at the time of death if he does good, and somebody's punished if they do bad? Why?
through their actions.
Well, why? Well, I mean, why? What makes it good or bad?
Because somebody said, some person said.
Yeah, that's God. But they don't believe in that. They think it's just going on by itself, some kind of law. But, well, why should a law, just an impersonal law, be moral? See, morality comes to person. That's our point. Therefore, there must be a God. Otherwise, the atheists are more consistent. They say, no, there's no God. You can do whatever you want. When you're dead, everything is finished. But even that, they can't stick to that, because then when they come into the society, they say, no, it has to be law. Why is that? Why does it have to be law? Why can't I just rape the 13-year-old girl? Like they just caught the guy, right? Buried the two bodies and buried them.
And when they're on the deathbed, the atheist is, oh, God, help me, you know, right at the last moment.
So they also say there should be law. But if you ask them, why, on what grounds should there be law? Well, so we can all live peacefully with each other and enjoy. That's the only answer. You say, well, I don't want to live peacefully. I like violence. I remember I met a Hell's Angel guy, a motorcycle guy. He was, you know, really sincere about saying, I like violence. I like to fight, you know, it's such fun. In a bar room, you know, you break out a stick, you start beating people. But, you know, that's, for him, that's good. That's why society always breaks down. Just like now, we try to tell these terrorists, no, it's not good, don't do it. But for them, it's good. To blow up people, innocent
people. They think it's their godly duty.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the other side is, in the name of God, there can be so many atrocities. But it doesn't mean that there isn't a God. Religion gets a bad press from these kind of people. That's another issue. We're talking as far as the Buddhists are concerned, because the Muslims, they're not, they believe in God, they're like Buddhists. But the Buddhists, they don't believe in God, so we don't even consider religion. For us, religion means, if you look in the dictionary, religion means belief in a supreme being. So we don't even consider the Buddhists religious. It's like the Scientology, we don't consider that a religion. It's some kind of, you know, mental concoction that may give you some relief or some kind of temporary satisfaction or temporary, you can say, peacefulness, because you have some principles there, some principles of religion there, like nonviolence and so on. But ultimately, it won't make a solution to the real dilemma. The real dilemma is, I have to stay here in this material world. So, until you recognize that the material world is also belongs to God, then you become you remain a trespasser. Trespasser is criminal because he's using somebody else's goods as it was his own. But that's what a thief is, right? A thief comes and takes something. No, I mean, this is mine. I'm going to use it. It's not yours. So nothing belongs to us. It's all. But who does it belong to? They don't know. But we say no. It belongs to Krishna. It belongs to God. So we should use it all in God's service. We'll be implicated. We'll become eligible to enter into the spiritual world. This is the thing with Arjuna. Why Bhagavad Gita is so poignant or intense? Because here's a person who's being asked to kill. And then Krishna says, no, you can't kill, but you have to do it on my behalf. Then there won't be any sinful reaction. So that's like the extreme position. Even you can kill. But first of all, you have to find out, you know, what Krishna wants. Start killing. That's where the Muslims go off. They don't have any parampara, they don't have any real sadhus or mahajan. We're saying, mahajana yenikatasa panta. We have to follow in the footsteps of the great souls. They don't have, even Muhammad, I mean, it's not like he may have given some religious principles, but he, you know, like he married his son's wife. His son's wife had a beautiful wife. He became lustily attracted to his son's wife, and he took her as his wife. He got permission from his son, she divorced him.
That was commonplace with the pharaohs of ancient Egypt too. They married their sisters or daughters.
So they're not really mahajan. Mahajan, he learned how to control his senses, some principle of religion. Like if you read in the Vedic, the Aryans, they had a strict code about how to deal with women. They didn't marry their sons' wives. There's no history like that. Especially in the prophet. He's the prophet. He's the leader of the whole religion. What kind of example is he setting? Marrying his son's wife.
Well, this idea of jihad, there's supposed to be two sections to it. One is the spiritual and one is the material.
Yeah, so that
they're picking up on the material angle of it, and they're
One is to society and one is to yourself. That's what I understood. In other words, that's what we say, the same thing. Don't try to make a revolution in the world, and you first make a revolution with yourself. If you really have your senses under control, become peaceful, so on, then you can help others. Otherwise, you just agitate others, you're going to change the whole
structure.
They're
doing things backwards over there. Trying to change the material energy.
Maharaj, what is spiritual intelligence?
Spiritual intelligence means to accept everything favorable for devotional service, reject everything unfavorable. Intelligence is used for accepting and rejecting, what's the best thing to do. So spiritual intelligence means that you accept what's favorable for pleasing Krishna.
This is called vidya.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Right. Avidya is
ignorance. Avidya is the opposite. It's a sense gratification.
Yeah. Or ignorance.
And you said also about like Arjuna is our guru. It's like... But how we can explain this? Because in Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning is Guru Parampara, is all this, and we can find Arjuna.
No, there'll be many that we can't find. It doesn't mean that they're not, just because they're not listed. There's only 30 people listed.
But this was like, many persons are asking.
Prabhupada answered that question in a letter.
I see.
And that's how he gave the answer. Things equal to themselves or equal to each other? This question came in 1967. If you look in the letter books, you can find it there. Same thing equal to themselves or equal to each other. If Arjuna is following, then we can accept him. He's a guru. But our line is coming,
I see.
A little different.
How far back toward Krishna can they trace the, disciplic succession? Sampradaya?
We trace it back to Krishna.
They can trace it all the way back to Krishna?
Yeah.
They have listed every guru's name
for
5,000 years?
Well, I mean, that's what the question is. There may be
some missing information.
But look in the Bhagavad Gita, we have it.
Yes.
Isn't it listed right in the beginning?
Yeah.
It says from Krishna came
Brahma.
Yes. From Brahma, Narada. Narada was his son. From Narada, Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva lived for thousands of years, so he's still living now, they say.
Yeah. And after Vyasa is Madhva.
Padmacharya, he was a great...
Yeah.
Who gave Krishna the information? Vishnu?
No, Krishna is the original. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchitananda Vigraha. Krishna always had the information. He's eternally in knowledge, unborn. Swarat means unborn and full of all qualities. He's always had them. There never was a time he didn't. Let him look at it. Can you read without your glasses?
Yeah, from a distance. How come Arjuna isn't listed under Krishna?
That's what the question he just asked, and I gave the answer. Baba was asked that question, and he said, there may be many lines coming down. Our line is from Brahma. We're called the Brahma's Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. So we're tracing, because actually Krishna spoke to Brahma before he spoke to Arjuna. He spoke to Brahma, when he first made this creation. Jai Shri Bhagavatam ki.
Jai.